can.
You know, that sounds pretty accurate, all things.
Okay, I guess we have a quorum. Welcome, everyone. I call the meeting to order. Introduction first, Dr. Barrett?
Barrett.
Dr. Barrett Wolf, assistant professor in the School of Business and Liberal Arts, right? And presiding officer of the faculty.
I'm sorry. I put that wrong. She's faculty senator.
That was my fault, Ron.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. No problem.
I did that quickly this morning. And
well, I thought
it's Karen is presiding officer.
Yeah, here we have faculty senator. Okay.
Right.
All right. Good. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
We minutes of the February 23rd meeting were emailed to you. Sure, you've had a chance to review those minutes. I'll entertain a motion to approve them.
So moved.
Moved by Tom, second by Joe. Are there any questions or additions, comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Approved. Thank you very much. New business, we have a list of advisory board appointments. Again, they were emailed to you, and hopefully you've had a chance to look at those. Recommended appointments too. The chair will entertain a motion to approve those advisory board appointments.
So moved.
Colleen moved, second.
Second.
Second by Tom. Any questions? Comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Approved. Thank you very much. The academic integrity policy was sent to you also by email, and you need a motion to approve.
So
moved by Marie, is her second. Second by Joe. Any questions? Tom?
I have a question. The policy lays out student rights and responsibilities, followed by faculty rights and responsibilities, which I thought were very, very clear, very well laid out, and followed by definitions of academic dishonesty. The section on academic dishonesty, though, seemed only to apply to the students. You have rights and responsibilities of faculty and students to start, but the dishonesty potentially only applies to the students. What about faculty? What if you have some professor that jumps the fence and decides that quantum physics is a communist conspiracy, and is teaching something that is so far off the ranch, or is injecting personal or political opinion and views into the classroom, and grading based on whether students abide by the professor's position. What happens if, I mean, in my mind, that would be academic dishonesty on the professors, on the teaching side of this, but I don't really see that represented in the definitions. Was there any discussion of that?
I don't think so. This was and Courtney, you can speak to this, as you worked with Phil LaMarche on this as well, correct?
Correct.
Maybe excuse me just a minute. I forgot to say that Courtney Bish is on the telephone. Sorry, Courtney.
Okay, that's okay. Morning, everyone.
Morning.
I think this was an attempt to further clarify what was not well spelled out in our existing policy in terms of the students' responsibility in terms of ethical behavior in the classroom, and in terms of.
And I think it does that well.
Right.
I think from the student side, it does that well. I guess it just kind of struck me that it was introduced as kind of an equal set of rights, student and instructor, but on the violation side, it was only on the student side.
Mm-hmm.
And something that might be useful here is to have a reference. Most of what you talked about exists in Board of Regents policy. Okay, so in terms of faculty responsibilities mm-hmm. and ways that faculty can reach this.
Okay.
And so we should probably put in a reference to that so people will know where it is. Okay, but as Doug just said, that already exists.
Okay.
And so if faculty breach that, then, of course, action will be taken. And I'm sorry to tell you, Tom, that even with the stuff here, I've had in my own experience on other campuses, I'm glad to say, cases where faculty did plagiarize and where action had to be taken. And, you know, in one case, it was termination because the plagiarism was serious and involved, you know, faking of data.
Mm-hmm.
And in another case, the plagiarism was less serious. It was just incomplete attribution, and a serious penalty was.
Those were the kind of examples that I was thinking of as I was thinking about what was missing here. So a reference, I didn't realize that those activities are covered in other documents. But if they could be referenced in here so it,
I think also number two, fabricating facts, statistics, and other forms of evidence. So in terms of bringing information in that is not accurate, is broadly speaking, kind of from the teaching and the research piece, the academic dishonesty you would typically see at a campus like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think we can do that.
So we can do that?
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure they'll take that as a friendly amendment.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not offering that up as any accusation or anything. No. Please.
No, that's a reasonable addition, so
but,
I don't see why anybody would object.
Okay, good. So, all right.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Approved. Thank you very much. Okay. New program proposals, and there are four of them. And again, that information, I think, would you say, Michaela, there is a copy here if anyone...
There is one copy,
if anyone would like to look at it.
Of each of the four.
But anyway, maybe we'll group all four together for a motion, and then if you have any questions, if you're agreeable with that. So the chair will entertain a motion to approve the four new program proposals. Moved by Tom, is there a second? Second by Chloe. Okay, questions? Comments? Anyone want to... give any further explanation?
These are all things that have been brought up before this group in the development stage.
I do have a couple of comments on the mechatronics proposal. I think this is a terrific proposal. There is one sentence in the program impact section, though, that I'm concerned a bit about. The sentence attributing development of the program to Senator Charles Schumer. You know, for those of us that were on the interview committee, when we were interviewing Dr. Safran, this was actually something that you talked about in your interview. So I see this as your first initiative, the beginning of Zvi Safran's legacy here, and I fail to see the connection to U.S. Senator Charles Schumer.
I can tell you what the connection is.
Well, let me keep going.
Okay.
I have a couple other objections to this as well.
All right.
I think this is a terrible precedent. You know, I've been on this board 18 years. I've read dozens of these. We have never attributed creation of a program to an elected official. And I just think it's a bad thing to start. You know, what's next? Patty Ritchie's waxing poetic about growing up on the farm and we create a new ag program? I think it's a bad precedent. We have a provost, we have a professional staff. It's their job to be looking to the future of the academy and what's the next great frontier. It's not elected officials who don't look to the next great frontier, they look to the next election cycle. And it's not a Republican-Democrat thing. I think this is bad precedent all the way around. I'd be Well, and finally, I think it's just dumb politics. You know, he's a federal official. This is going to the state for approval. State bureaucrats don't care what federal officials think any more than federal officials care what state officials. You know, if this was going to the federal Department of Education, Charles Schumer swings a pretty big bat. You'd ask for help. He can't even get in the ballpark in Albany. It's just, they are two different arenas. So.
You're saying one doesn't influence the other?
Not at all.
I disagree.
Not at all. Well, and in fact, in this specific case, there is some influence, but it's not the influence we want. Chuck Schumer's greatest accomplishment, in my view, is shepherding through the appointments process Preet Bharara into the Attorney General's position. And Bharara's number one target has been the Cuomo administration. So we're asking the Cuomo administration, I mean, it's like waving a red flag in front of them. I think it's dumb politics. But I also think it's, even before we get to that, I just think it's inappropriate.
That part may be true. But the part about politics, it unfortunately does play a major role in everything. And I think, I know many situations over my 40 years in running an agency where it has made a significant difference by including a political figure in something where you know he's going to have influence. Now, maybe in this situation there isn't that, but I'm just saying I know that to be true.
Well, and Joe, I share your opinion because I've dealt in a political environment for my entire career. I understand that. I think this is completely inappropriate from the policy standpoint as well as from the specifics of this. Asking a Cuomo appointee to approve a program knowing that his boss and Chuck Schumer despise each other,
yeah,
I think is crazy.
Yeah.
I'd like to know why the reference was made. There has to be some rationale. They just didn't put it in willy-nilly. So there must have been some reason given. In some way, Schumer must have at least known about this program.
The reason that was put in, and again, perhaps it needs to be rephrased, okay, is because Senator Schumer is a strong supporter of development of mechatronics engineering programs in the state and was a supporter of a multi-million dollar federal grant that would have started one-year mechatronics certificate programs at, I've forgotten the number, of community colleges that are part of SUNY. And so, presumably, what the program is hoping for, and we would hope for at the federal level, okay, is that Schumer will support this program, right, and are getting grant funds to do this, and then to tie them to the community colleges, which we would see as feeders into this program. Still, I mean, what you say is right, Tom, in terms of, you know, we don't want to make statements that are overtly political, and so I think that perhaps a better way of phrasing this would be to just reference prior support that the senator has had for programs in mechatronics and that we agree that this is a strong need in the state. And letting it go with that.
I could live with that. I think if you want an opening sentence, something a little more philosophical, a little higher thinking about mechatronics being, you know, the future of engineering and manufacturing process in the United States. Or so, I mean, set the stage. It's nice that Senator Schumer has supported it, but put it in the third paragraph. Don't lead with it.
Actually, I think since the purpose of this document is getting the curricula approved by SUNY and State Ed, and I think the purpose of mentioning Schumer in thinking about this is the possibility of funding. So that this document in and of itself, I think you're right, does not need to include that. We could simply just delete the words from U.S. Senator Charles Schumer, who desired, so it just says, the program developed out of an interest to improve manufacturing capabilities in New York State. Get the curricula approved.
Get the curriculum
approved. And if we
approved,
want to
right.
reference him at a time and a place where it would be advantageous, for example, for
yes.
funding, we can remember that possible connection.
Yes.
But for approval of the curriculum,
remember,
it's not necessary.
You probably won't hurt to remember that Governor Cuomo is also supporting right now programs that will increase a pipeline of graduates that will go into the manufacturing area. So if we're going to get political, we might as well mention
it.
I don't think we want to get political.
In the funding stage.
Yes, in the funding stage. At this point, I think it's thin ice.
I'd just like to say that any council member probably would be on the plan, maybe the most political here. Don Maria, maybe.
We're getting blamed for everything.
We're all political appointees.
Well, that's true, too.
When I read that, it was just like a offhand thing. Like,
yeah, it didn't register.
I hardly even
know
that.
Really,
I
agree with you, Tom.
I didn't even look at it
being
political.
But I just wanted to know why.
I suppose if it would say Donald Trump, I would be upset.
So would I. Like I said, we've got a professional staff here that, you know, we pay them well to think about the future of education programming here. We don't pay our politicians to think about the future of our educational programming here.
We're so delighted when they do.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. Particularly when there's money attached to it.
Exactly.
But we have to feed them. We don't. We have to feed them the information.
Right.
So.
If you remove that, Tom, it may guarantee that you would never show up at the commencement either.
Good. No, I'll tell you what. I've heard him give three commencement speeches at three different schools.
Yeah.
It's all the same speech.
Same speech.
Yeah. Over several years.
Maybe everyone doesn't know that Senator Schumer has it. About showing up at commencement unannounced, I think, at Carson last week.
Yeah.
He just comes in.
Yeah. And how do you say no to a U.S. senator?
Right.
You make room in the program.
So.
But it's the same. He hasn't rewritten it in several years.
So are you comfortable with what?
If If we take out the reference to, so it says the program is developed out of interest to improve the manufacturing capabilities.
Which is the same thing without the reference.
Without
right.
the political reference. Yes, I would support that.
I support that as well. Because I was happy to hear it clarified in terms of maybe including it and maybe a funding mm-hmm. document. I support it.
I would
think
it's a great idea to anyone who wants to fund us.
You may want to leave it.
No, at the time when the you know the checkbook is out.
Yeah, the checkbook.
What a great idea. So make that out too.
Marie?
I'm okay with that too.
Marianne?
Yep.
Any other questions about any of the four new program goals?
I'd like to say I'm delighted with the fact there are four new strong.
I agree. I thought they're all very interesting. I think they will be very timely in the market.
Students.
I think they look good.
And in the spirit of the vitality of this institution, there are more coming next year, which really makes the difference between this institution and the other SUNYs that are struggling. And it has to do with being entrepreneurial and innovative and creating programs that draw new additional students who otherwise wouldn't be coming, and that's something that's really striking about SUNY Canton is that the willingness and the culture of innovation. For in fact, this is only half of the new. You know, there are four or five more that will be written up and coming here next year, which is amazing. And you look at the possible enrollments at year five, and you do the math times 8,000. You think, and you look if they're not online programs, and you think they're going to move into our residence halls,
mm-hmm.
and that's the thing that makes the difference between our campus and some of the other SUNYs that are really struggling.
Good work.
Anything else? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you very much. All business, I'm not aware of any. Any of the members have any? One question I do have, some time ago, the Faculty Senate was to vote to approve, I think it was a course like art or music appreciation.
Yes.
Was that approved?
Yes, it was.
Oh, it was.
It's on the books for the fall.
Great.
Yes, I think it's Music 101, Intro to Music, but it's in just, in essence, a music appreciation world music course.
I'm really happy to see that. I keep pushing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In my report, I don't have too much, other than maybe the commencement, Marie and I presented Deanna Solomon, the student council member, president, that was a member of the council, with a gift showing our appreciation for her service for the year. And we also mentioned the commencement and thanked her public for that. Maybe we could let the meds show something to them.
Yep.
Okay, good. And you may know that Liz Erickson Brown now was awarded the President's Service Award at commencement, which apparently was quite a surprise.
She was surprised.
Yeah.
I said, a number of words of thanks at the faculty meeting. And it was earlier that day, and that threw her off the track. So when it happened there, she was very surprised.
I thought the medals was a nice touch. It took a little more time, but I think it was worth it. Good for alumni, too, giving. Something tangible.
Had, 450 walk.
Yeah.
Maybe 900 graduates. What happens if we had 900 show up?
But we're out of money.
Will that take 2 days? We'll have to split it in 2 days. And I just want to thank Michaela and Diane Collins and the committee, the entire commencement committee. They went off very well. I know you guys do a lot of work at this time of year, with honors convocation and employee recognition day, and sometimes I think we forget how much work is involved. But we want to thank.
Thank you.
And Courtney Bish is with us on telephone today. We hope you're feeling better, Courtney.
Thank you very much.
All right. Okay, good. That's all I have. President's report. Now we'll get to the real meat.
Well, we've heard about some of it already, but just to try to hit the highlights, we had a very good year, and next year promises to be even better. I guess the most important thing is, how are our students doing? So let's start at the end and move to the beginning. The end is graduation, or almost the end. We hope they'll stay in the North Country, too. Right? We're working on postgraduate. Right, which is our business accelerator, but that's coming in the future. But we have 900 students earning certificates or degrees, associates and bachelors. And as you heard, graduation went very, very well. The ceremony was wonderful. The students were excited and engaged, and there were more than a few tears, right, from students who didn't want to leave. And so when you've got students who are graduating and still want to stay in the North Country, even those who come from far away from here, then you must be doing something right. And so we're very, very proud of that. How well did the students do? Did they just barely graduate? No, about half of them graduated with honors. Okay, and so that's very, very impressive. And, one of the things that I like to ask at graduation is a series of questions. How many of you had a part-time job while going to college? How many had a full-time job? How many of you raised a family? How many of you were first in your family to go to college? How many of you relied on financial aid? How many of you served in our nation's uniformed services? And so you'd be amazed at how many students stood up for each of those things. In terms of, holding a job, almost everybody had a part-time or a full-time. In terms of financial aid, everybody had relied on financial aid. And we had significant numbers of students who had served in the military, who were first in their family, and who did community service while at the college. And so that kind of shows you that our students aren't coming from wealthy families that can afford to fund them such that they go to school and all they have to do is study. They take the harder road. pay where they have a lot of other responsibilities too, and so they come out from under the line. So we're very proud of that. Jumping to the other end of the student pipeline, how are we doing with admission? And as Doug just alluded to, these are very difficult times for admission. I think I saw last week that of the 23 comprehensives or colleges of technology, 19 are down in enrollment. Some pretty significantly. They're down in applications, they're down in deposits. I'm pleased to tell you that when it comes to applications, we're actually number one in SUNY. We had the largest increase of any SUNY, right, which was about 20%.
SUNY will figure out some way to punish us for that, I'm sure.
But we'll force them into punishing us. Now, unfortunately, you know, you can't get all 20% in terms of actual deposits, because some of that 20% shows up in programs that are capped, okay, where we have no more capacity, like nursing, vet tech, and the like. But the good news is that about half of them are in other programs, and so at the moment our deposits are up significantly as well. Okay, and I think they were up 8 or 9% last I looked. And so that's very good indeed. And so it looks like this is going to be a good year in terms of student enrollment. Budget-wise, this is a challenging time. Okay, in fact, Lenore and I this afternoon are going down to Albany to have several meetings with our legislative colleagues tomorrow to talk about the budget, because this is the worst budget for SUNY in 10 years anyway. And so the challenges are that there's no tuition increase, okay, but there is a continuing increase in need among students, and since the TAP doesn't cover everything, then the TAP gap will probably rise a little bit, and we have to pay that. And there's also a negotiated salary increase coming, right? The folks down in Albany negotiate the salaries and it increases, but we have to pay for it. And so whatever that winds up being, we'll have to cover. Right, and that could easily be $400,000, $500,000. And so we start the year, in effect, behind, okay, by that amount of money, offset by the number of new students. And so, you know, we'll be fine, okay, but it's a challenging environment. And I guess the other good news is, fiscally, we are either first or second in terms of stability in SUNY. Okay, there are other campuses, and I will not mention any nearby ones' names, okay, but we are not in the hole. Our budget is balanced and we have reserves, okay, and like I said, we're number one or number two in SUNY, depending on which list you look at. In terms of fiscal stability, and have a lot of confidence in our fiscal leadership, in fact, that told us to spend more money, okay, and so I guess, I'm not sure we're going to listen, but that's a good position to be in. And so that's really good. Academically, I'll leave most of this to Doug, but you just heard about the degree programs that were approved, and as you heard, there are more on the way. And so good things are happening there. I should mention that in terms of recognition, we've got a lot of recognition this year. Last year, I was very pleased that we had 5 winners of Chancellor's Awards. This year, we have 8. And so they include Fred Saburo from our math department, excellence in adjunct teaching. 2 students, Cody McKee and Rebecca Burns. Cody's from Civil Engineering Technology, and Rebecca is from Vet Tech, and they won the Student Excellence Awards. We're limited to 2 there, okay, by the size of the college, and so we would have had more if we didn't feel this. Michelle Currier from our library, with excellence in professional service. Bill Jones from Business, Excellence in Faculty Service. Umesh Kumar from Finance, Excellence in Scholarship and Creative Activities. Diane Perrin from Sports Management, Excellence in Teaching. And Janet Livingston, Excellence in Classified Service. And so we had a pretty good clean sweep. Okay, so we're very proud of that. Something else that we've gotten a lot of recognition for lately is our interactions with the military. And so this, you know, happens kind of across the board on campus. We're named as one of the most military-friendly colleges in America by various agencies that rate such things, both for people in the military, for veterans, and for families of veterans. We're doing great things academically, and so an example of that is the Solar Ready Vets program that we offer to help soldiers make the transition from the military to good careers in the solar industry. We've already had two cohorts graduating in that program, and three more to come. And the military is ultra impressed and wants to replicate this program nationwide. And so that's real good. And most recently, I had the pleasure of attending two things on campus. One of our students was commissioned, okay, into the infantry in the area of military intelligence. I told him he was kind of moving in opposite directions from him because he's headed for Georgia. Okay, and so I was giving them some advice on how to brew sweet tea properly. The difference between you all and all you all. That's important cultural stuff.
That's right.
Right? And so that was wonderful. And we also had the opening on our campus, or the inauguration, I should say, of the Battle Buddies Center. Okay? And this is the only such center in the North Country. And so when it comes to supporting our military, I think there's nobody who can touch us.
So you mentioned two cohorts have gone through the solar ready or the solar training program. Are they going right out and getting jobs? What do we know about them as
yes,
they?
They're getting jobs.
Good.
And a number of them haven't completed yet their military service.
Okay.
Okay, so they're doing this. It's kind of the last thing in their military service. But the ones who have completed, yes,
they're finding
but
work
that
right now.
The number is very small at this point because the graduation was what, 4 months ago, 3 months ago.
There was a second one.
Yeah, the second one was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the majority of them aren't out.
They're not out yet.
Do we track that?
They will be tracked.
Okay.
And one of the components of the program is that prospective employers come and interview them at the conclusion of the program. And a lot of them get job offers
right now. Exactly. So that's what we
heard. Good.
Yeah, so anyway, so that's going really well. Athletically, again, I know that Courtney will be giving most of this information. I know you all know we're in Division III of NCAA, and our teams have done very, very well, not just in terms of making it to their playoffs for the individual sports, we have several teams doing that, but also in terms of how well the students do academically. So the average GPA of all of our athletic teams is pretty much above 3.0, and that's weekly. And so the retention rates for these students are higher than the average student on campus. So athletics works for us, both in terms of providing additional activities for students, but also in terms of academics and retention. And so we're very proud of that. And I guess then I'd be remiss in not mentioning, in terms of our advancement area, they're doing a lot of new things, and I'm going to talk about them. We already heard from one, which is the medallions, and those were very well received at graduation, but other good things too that they can tell you about. Okay, and the college continues to get excellent publicity and awareness. I'll mention something that nobody else here knows. But I was on Saturday night, I'll say this here just because it is confidential. On Saturday night, I was at Tony Collins' house. And they were doing a fundraiser for the Children's Museum in Boston. And both Tony and his wife took the opportunity to come up to me and tell me how much they're impressed by what's going on at the college, and how they keep seeing our name in the newspapers all the time, always for good things. And I felt a little jealousy in some of that voice, right? But it was nice to hear that from a president of a college that's, you know, been around a little longer than we have, and that we collaborate with in a number of ways. And so that was good news indeed, and it only shows the fine job that our folks in public relations do. And but of course, they wouldn't have anything to write about if there weren't lots of good things happening on campus. Right? And so it's a team effort. It's the whole campus, right? That's necessary to make all of these things that we've heard about happen. And so as I come to the end of my second year at the college, I'm prouder than ever of what we've accomplished and what we can accomplish. And that completes my report. And so now I turn to the various areas to fill in on them. So Doug, about academic affairs.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things that's happened this year is the submission of the Middle States Monitoring Report, which was due on April 1. I think it was a strong report. It was backed up by a lot of work by all across the campus in all the departments assessing student learning outcomes, which was the request to demonstrate that we had a system that was implemented and sustainable of assessing student learning outcomes and creating continuous improvement based on that data. And not only the report described the system that was in place, but I think it's will have a positive result because it also included the data. So here's the data, here's the changes that are being made based on that data, here are the dollars that have been allocated to make those changes, and here's what's happening next year. We'll hear in early to mid-July on the commission's acceptance of that report. However, the normal case, which I experienced at my previous institution, normally they send a small team to visit in September or October to verify that, in fact, everything that in the report is, in fact, going on. You know, no smoke and mirrors here. That's the norm, the exception, so it would be amazing. I mean, we can high-five ourselves if we don't have a small team visit. That would mean that we really wrote an amazing report. But normally we'll have three or four people here in the fall. But that shouldn't be a problem because there was no smoke and mirrors. It was a lot of work of every single faculty member. And I think it will be very positive. So that's done, and hopefully we're hoping for a positive result in July and then in the fall. And we would hear, if they do send a visit in September, October, we would hear by about Thanksgiving, early November. Other things that have happened, progress in academic affairs. You know, we had two of our deans were on interim positions, the Dean of Canino and the Dean of Science, Health, and Criminal Justice. Handling them separately, Ken Erickson in Science, Health, and Criminal Justice had been in that position for almost 6 years as an interim, and he had been searched. And based on that, what we decided to do was to request feedback from across campus about how he was doing and ask the committee to review that and make a recommendation. That recommendation was to make him permanent, and so that's what we're doing as of the conclusion this year. With Canino, Mike Newtown had not been searched. He'd been in that position as an interim for 3 years. He was searched as a faculty member, but not as a dean. So what we did is an internal search. We had two candidates apply, and that were literally awaiting the search committee's summary of strengths and weaknesses and recommendation any moment. But so hopefully we'll have that resolved. I'm seeing this as a moving past the all of the transition that's happened over the last bunch of years to a stable state of leadership so we can move forward with all the good work and just kind of move on. So I'm looking forward to that being resolved so as we hit next year, those things will be done. We're also creating a Center for Academic Excellence with asking internally for two faculty to have some release time from teaching, one to lead this academic assessment and continuous improvement piece, and one to lead other professional development for faculty. We're going to see how that goes. And hopefully, I'm looking for them to provide the kind of support and guidance and professional development for faculty to take us to the next level. And also, you didn't speak about this to be, it's sort of a college-wide position, the co-CDO. Okay, you can add. I won't steal your fire then. So I think things are going well. Zivit mentioned the admissions picture. The applications are up 19.5%. Acceptances are up 13.6%, and similarly, then the deposits were in that yield phase. I actually sent the director of admissions, you know, from Google Images, a picture of a yield sign. I'm just saying, just something to think about yield. She's just going to put it up, put it over, overheard, because it's all about yielding these applicants into actual deposits and enrollments. We are having a program this summer, which we were funded from SUNY, $575,000, called Jumpstart. And this is a program to offer students a summer support program, much like EOP, but without the requirements of EOP, to prepare students to land in their freshman fall more ready to move on. These are students who wouldn't otherwise be accepted, who might be coming in developmental ed. And we're hoping what this means is we'll be providing additional support to them. This year, we're looking to fill 50 spots, but we were funded to accept 100 to 150 additional students per year for 5 years, and then make that sustainable by their tuition. So again, that's serving more students who we wouldn't normally be serving with additional support, and also drawing in additional revenue. So that's kind of exciting. So they will be having a 5-week summer program beginning July 25th. We're going to have some students on campus more than we normally would. Also, the EOP program is going to be, I believe, a 2-week program this year, looking to expand it in the future. All of that is also, besides serving students and serving more students very well, points well to our budget picture in the future. As we mentioned, one of the struggles is we have flat funding with no real budget increase. And if the faculty at UUP contract, the UUP union and CSEA, they usually come similarly, if they get a well-deserved contractual salary increase without state backfilling of that, the typical before the financial crisis was a 4% increase. The Division of Academic Affairs, that would add up to $460,000. And that's a lot of money. Meaning, you know, in my mind, that's 9 faculty positions. So we separated by people who resigned or retired about $1 million worth of salary in academic affairs last year. If we have to cover, you know, so that, you know, how many faculty is that? Or, you know, if we suddenly now have $460,000 that we have to pay in salary increases because Albany has negotiated that but not funded it, that means all these folks leave and we are only able to replace about half of them. So it really is a cut in the instructional force. And that's weighing heavily on my mind. And that's where, because if the revenue isn't going to come from state funding, it has to come from tuition. So all of these efforts to attract new additional students are really, really important, because that is really how the college runs. It runs on tuition. So the new programs that will bring students here and serve them well are really important to them as well as the institution. So that's the work that we have on our horizon.
Any questions for Doug?
Doug, I have one, and we talked briefly when we were lining up for commencement about the student pool obviously is growing smaller and smaller. And I can't help but see that there will be many institutions closing. Burlington College closed yesterday. What do you think we have to do to continue attracting that smaller pool of students?
Well, I think the pool is smaller geographically, so we have to not be a regional institution. Because last June, 860 people graduated from high school in St. Lawrence County. We have 4 institutions here. 860 is not a freshman class at 1 institution. So clearly, and we are SUNY, we serve the state. The student body is not shrinking in the state of New York. You know, demographically, the population of the state and the country is growing. So we are well poised, because we have been serving the state very well. There aren't a lot of people here with 4 institutions. So nicely, we have been serving the state. We have to continue to do that, to serve here as well as broadly. So our admissions folks, and we have a new director of admissions, well, new, no longer new, but finishing her second year, who I think is leading that charge very well. And I can say that with the data behind it, with applications up 20%. One of the other things we're really trying to do is to, if we have a fixed amount of energy put into recruiting applicants and enrollees, to target those programs that have existing capacity. So where there are 15 seats in a 20-person classroom. If we can get more applicants into that particular degree program, there's no additional instructional cost, but there's additional revenue. So she's been trying to target the tech high schools, for example, students who would be interested in our Pendino programs, because those have some capacity. So that's really the issue, is the new programs, filling the programs that have capacity, and recruiting across the state. And of course, we're also looking, although it's harder because if you head out outside of the state, other states or internationally, your resources for recruitment become diluted, because it's a big world. But that's also on the agenda as well. But in my mind, I think about not just looking at the entire world, but developing specific funnels that will have a reasonable return on the investment to develop that a relationship, but will also have a meaningful number of students enrolling from that area.
Would you see in maybe not the foreseeable future, but would you see ever time that the State University of New York would close campuses?
That's not a decision for
I know
zip code, unfortunately.
I know it'd be political, you know, death for.
You know, one of the things that they used to say before they were talking about closing campuses was, with 64 campuses, I think I may have the statistic wrong, but the chancellor used to say 80% of the population of New York State lives within 30 miles of a SUNY campus. When it costs over $11,000 to live on our campus and eat here, $8,000 to study, you know, $6,700 in tuition and plus $1,200 in fees, $8,000 in tuition, and that's pretty ish across SUNY. Between $8,000 and over $20,000 if you have to live on campus. Closing SUNY campuses means students can no longer commute, who very often choose, if they are financially struggling, to commute even for the first 2 years to their local community college to save a bundle and make education reachable. So I actually had this conversation in when we went to SUNYCon with legislative staffer, and I was like, no, this is why we would not want to do that, because suddenly you can't commute even for your first 2 years and save $25,000, and it becomes not reachable. So someone in Albany, until they put me in charge in Albany, someone might make that decision, but I think it would be a mistake, because it's a strength of this state that higher education is very reachable. I think specifically because you don't have to go and pay to live on a campus. At least for the first 2 years, you can save a bundle of money if you need to. So I think it would be a mistake. But
a campus could get in a position like Burlington College did. I mean, you just can't.
I think the campuses they were going to see going first.
Pardon me?
I think the campuses we're going to see going first nationally are those small privates that 100 miles away no one's heard of. I moved here from Buffalo. Damon College, Medai College, DeYouville College. Would you go and spend private tuition money? You know, Canisius is well known because of their sports. But Medai, DeYouville, in fact, Medai is, I've had several people who applied for their CFO and president positions, friends who went, you know, I interviewed and I went, might not want to do that. And, you know, yeah, I delved in a little deeper. They're looking to merge with Canisius because they're not attracting from a national market like Canisius can with their sports name. And why would you spend $50,000 a year to go to Medai when Buff State is half a mile away? So I think those campuses will go first because they're not going to attract outside of their region. They have the high price tag without the brand. We have the price point, we have the SUNY brand as well as the SUNY Canton brand, and we have fiscal stability, that we have a leadership that is watching that carefully so as to not have to worry about that.
Is there one particular theme, being an old marketing guy like I am, that you would say would be drawing 20% is wonderful? And I'm just saying, is there any one particular theme while people from outside the region, I'm not sure how many would be outside, say Lawrence County that would come, but I was just wondering if there was one particular theme that would bring them in that has been successful.
I think think what, in my
quality
mind,
of education,
it's the quality of education, but what's different from here than down the road, you know, we have criminal investigations, they have criminal justice. So what's different about that? We have applied hands-on degree programs. I think at a campus like this, people come here for a specific degree program. Sort of like when people go to graduate school, they don't go to the college, they go to their degree, the specific program. And so we have specific programs,
right.
And the end point is our graduates get jobs because we prepare them in that way with an eye towards, eye on the prize.
Uh-huh.
You're going to have a great experience here, you're going to learn a lot, and you're going to be able to do that. Our folks are going to be able to hit the ground running. The employers are going to hire them first because they're able to start producing or doing the job quickly. And I think it's about the type and quality of the education here.
I continuously hear this from employers and from people who I just went into, right, that they recognize the difference in our graduates from others is that ours are ready to add value and hit the ground running right immediately. And we push that real hard. I think maybe Travis is going to talk about this in terms of, you know, some of the PR and advertising we're going to do next year as well. So we're doing a lot of things.
Doug, you hinted earlier that there were some new programs coming next year. Can you shed a little light on that? You piqued my interest.
Cybersecurity had a delay, so that one's going to be coming in the fall. And if anyone can remember the spreadsheet, because there were half that were going
this
year.
Cybersecurity, and track in hospitality.
Hospitality and tourism management.
Money.
Yeah, early childhood management.
Yep, that's right, early childhood management. Possibly, we're looking at developing tracks in business. Possibly a track that would serve folks who have other technical applied degrees who could then add a management bachelor's degree on top of that.
And we're discussing our first master's should be.
Ah, interesting. Yeah. The cybersecurity program, would that be would that be part of like the criminal justice program, or would it be part of business and technology?
Actually,
what's the focus?
Part of IT.
Part of IT.
In fact, their advisory board said we're pleased to see that there was cybersecurity well infused in each of their courses because it plays a role in, you know, in all of the existing types of things they're learning. Now I'm brushing up against, I know no more than that. I can, you know,
that's
not my discipline, but that. So they're saying keep that up, keep it infused because you have to know about cybersecurity when you're running a network and you're, you know, all of the applications that they're training the students in. But that this the major in and of itself will be a real value that those folks are. As we experienced with GE talking about the Canino folks, we said, how many graduates would you like? And they said, all of them. And so we're hearing, they're saying, everyone needs these people. So they're kind of waiting. They're like, please get this program going and get them graduated because we want to hire them. So it's an IT program. But you can imagine they might, depending on where they want to end up working.
Right, but applications.
They might want to pick
very
up some
broadly
electives
across the economy.
Criminal investigations and so forth.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, the whole computing area is one that's ripe for development.
Oh, no question.
On this campus, and you'll remember I mentioned this before, and poor Mike down in Canino, I've told him I'm not going to be happy until he's got 3,000 students.
At my previous institution, I was dean over criminal justice, and I had a meeting with recruiters from CIA and FBI, and FBI was saying, I might get them mixed up. One of them was talking about who they were hiring from our folks there. One of them, it might have been the CIA, was saying, you know, it's cyclical in terms of what they're looking for. And they said, we're no longer looking for just the generic criminal justice major. They said, you know, we want folks who can speak Farsi or Arabic. Or if you're cybersecurity, we'll take you. You know, that's who we're going to hire right now. They said, 10 years ago, it was someone else. Depending on what was going on in the world, where they needed certain skills. But in fact, separate from speaking a Middle Eastern language, cybersecurity would get someone hired in the CIA, I think it was.
Good.
Next up, advancement.
Anne? Yes. So our office has been busy through the spring, not surprisingly, as everyone has been. And in its usual fashion, our staff have been out on the road meeting with alumni and staffing events for our alumni in areas such as Arizona, California, Florida, Colorado, and various places around New York State. We ran a new angle for our spring appeal. Spring appeal is typically smaller than the fall appeal, but it's trying to capture people who might not have given in the fall appeal. And so we tied it in with the medallions that were being given at commencement and included this opportunity to include a message to graduates congratulating them, trying to create that connection of, or the connection between alumni and current students. And we had a really great response from that. I think close to 500 donors and $12,000, which was about twice what the spring appeal brought in last year. So we felt very good about how that worked and plan to continue that theme in subsequent years. The other great angle of that with the medallions was that the medallions were presented at commencement, and as Marie noted, it was a nice addition to the ceremony. Students really appreciated it. Kelly Obermeyer was there. She's there for a commencement rehearsal and says a few words to the students so they got to know who she was, and then we, as they practiced by walking across the stage, we handed each one an alumni pin. So as students came across the stage and got their medallions, Kelly was just great in this role. She was so cheerful and chatty with every student who came along. She was like, you're wearing your alumni pin. I'm so glad to see that. Here's your medallion. Get off the stage. Here you go. Kept it moving. And a lot of people pitched in to make that possible. Our first run through, Michaela was there handing the boxes at the end. In every box was a message from alumni that we had printed on cards so that when they opened up their boxes, they could put the medallion in it, they would see that message that said congratulations and whatever other words alumni wanted to include there. So we plan to continue this, and I think it's a nice way to build up that connection. And it's also ties in with our efforts in creating an active student alumni association. And we're talking with and working with student government representatives to get that going for next year and feel quite hopeful that we'll get a good active group. This spring, we also ran the s'mores events during finals week, which students had really enjoyed back in December. So we did it again during finals for two nights this time with the fire pits set up outside the library, and the smell of roasting marshmallows wafted in through the ventilation system and drew students out. And we even did special deliveries to the tutoring center because the tutors couldn't come outside. So we made lots of s'mores and carried them in so they could have them too. That's a lot of fun, and I think it's also just a very nice connection for alumni association and students and for them to know about our office. When we think about first-generation college students, you know, one of the things we have to remember is they may not even be familiar with the term alumni. We can't assume that they know what that means or even that you're expected to have a relationship with your college after you graduate. So that's part of the role that we have to play, is teaching students about what it means. You go to a college, you graduate, and then you have this lifelong relationship. So that's going to be part of our goal, is building that relationship. We have, in addition to the Canton Fund gifts coming in, we had five new scholarship endowments that were approved last week at the foundation board meeting. And we've had some other major gift commitments. We have a donor who has set up a testamentary trust arrangements, so it'll be somewhere between $500,000 and $750,000 that will establish some trusts when he passes away. We realized another trust, a charitable trust that a donor had set up about 10 years ago, now the remainder that has come to us is $767,000, so that's a nice sum to have sort of freed up for use, for the use that the donor specified. And we have a new major gift commitment of $300,000 from Bob Rogers, who he and his wife are naming the basketball court, or for, I got that name wrong, sorry, for Stan Rogers. Stan Cohen, mixing up my names. So Stan, the former basketball coach, Stan Cohen, the basketball court is being named in his honor by Bob Rogers. And he and his wife are giving that sum to do that. We'll also be having a fundraising appeal for others to contribute towards the naming because Stan Cohen was such a well-liked and well-known basketball coach. There are a lot of people expressed an interest. As is typically the case in such fundraising ventures, you need that large naming gift to get you there to pretty much close to the end, because the other gifts may come in as a couple hundred or $25, but it's an opportunity to get a lot of people participating, so that will be getting launched soon. So within our office, the summer is going to be a time of significant work behind the scenes, as we've been doing, but still continuing with more planning. We have a search going on currently, and we hope by the end of the month to be making an offer to a candidate, because we're very pleased with the candidates that we've interviewed so far. And we're continuing work on our database, using the elements of Banner that we can use more effectively to do our work, and that's actually a pretty big data project, getting data to populate the program and clean up our records. So those are some of the big things that we'll be working on over the summer.
I'd just like to add that we need to send a special thanks to the foundation office for rescuing the medallions from the ceremony.
Yes. It was a little bit of a close call, as I said, our first time through, and we wanted to have Velcro on the back to make it easier to just put it around necks rather than trying to fit it over their heads, which it wouldn't fit over the hats. And anyways, they had to get sent back to have the Velcro added, and in the end we received them at midday. First box came in the morning, the other boxes came in the afternoon on Friday, and graduation was Saturday.
It's called just in time.
It is.
Just in time.
But exactly. Some people work very hard to make this all work.
We don't want to repeat that next year, really. But many lessons learned along the way.
Have you succeeded in selling the Lincoln yet?
Oh, yes. That happened.
I subscribed to a couple of collected car magazine that saw the advertising.
Yes, we had a lot of interest. Off the top of my head, I can't remember what it sold for, but it was a
1600. I think.
1600. Yeah.
1000.
1000.
Yeah.
Sorry. And it brought a good price from what we were expecting, and in fact, cars like antique cars that could be sold like that would be are excellent types of gifts. As that one showed. That was a nice opportunity because the auto tech students refurbished the car to the point that it could be sold for a higher price because it had.
So that Lamborghini in the driveway run.
I know, we went to the auto show in Ottawa there a couple months ago, and there were three or four automobiles there. You could get $3.1 million. But you had to order it.
Well, I made a presentation to the foundation board last week and was updating, educating the group about the types of gifts that we can accept and making the point that it doesn't always have to be cash or stock. There are other things we can take, like cars or art. And I said, if anybody has like the Mona Lisa sitting in the closet that they just don't have space for on their wall anymore, we'd happy to accept that kind of gift too.
You can incorporate that into automobile technology. refurbishing antique and collector cars.
That's exactly what they did.
Isn't it?
Yeah, they refurbished that car, and that's what helped make it sell for the large amount that it did. Karen, faculty governance?
A bunch of what faculty governance has been involved in lately is passing several of the new programs and courses for those programs. So I'm not going to run through the new programs, but we formalized our engaged, not engaged policy and practice. After the third week of the semester, faculty will enter into a electronic database, whether their perception is the student, whether the student is engaged and not engaged in the course. And what we have found is that students that are, this is data that I remember, so you may help me out, students that were not engaged in three or more classes had a very high rate of not being successful at the end of the semester. That's not new, and we've heard faculty say for years, I know who's going to pass by the third week of class. Well, we're trying to collect all that data so that, okay, these are the students we've identified at risk, and the retention committee is going to be working on intervention strategies. Once we know who's at risk, what can we do during the fourth week to bring them around so they have a successful semester? Throughout the semester, support them. So they approved that policy. They approved the academic integrity policy that you just did. They delete a course, but they chose not to. Of course, they approved the announcements of three minors, applied psychology, crime and society, criminal justice administration. They approved changes to 24 existing courses. Many of them were automotive. It looks like that put them doing some updating and changing to their program. They approved 45 new courses this last meeting. Most of those were to support the four new programs. They approved minor changes to two existing programs. They deleted an individual study certificate. I don't even think it was in the catalog. I remember right, because I know when it came to faculty affairs, Maureen and I were like, I don't know, we had this. She used to be a dean, and I used to be an interim provost. So we thought we would have known our programs, but apparently we didn't. So I don't think it's going to have a big impact because we didn't know we had it. Yeah, so I don't think it's going to take a big hit in admissions. We've been struggling with a quorum issue. Our original bylaws for our faculty assembly include almost all professional staff on campus, mostly UUP and a few others. It also included College Association, and by including all UUP members, it includes a lot of part-time workers. Like an adjunct who teaches one class for us online that lives in California. We were supposed to have at least 51% of the voting members to hold quorum. That we never got there. We didn't get to a quarter half the time. So when we look at the bylaws, and most of them are taking out part-time workers, they don't have an expectation that they have to be there. They weren't coming. So to try to help us meet quorum at our meetings, we have provisions to bylaws. They were voted on the last faculty assembly. The votes are somewhere with Liz and Maureen. I don't know what the outcome is yet, but we are struggling with coming up with a quorum, and that if what passes goes through and no one objects to the minutes at the beginning of the fall meeting, we should be closer. We'll only need 120 some people to show up, which would be 51% of our full-time professional staff. And so represented groups like foundation, people that work for the foundation, not stateside, with some representative, things like that. Hopefully it all goes through and things are settled in the fall. Other campuses have had problems because they don't have a quorum, and if someone during a faculty assembly meeting stands up and asks for a quorum count, and the quorum isn't there, they can't act on any business that day. And campuses have been struggling. They couldn't pass anything for several months because they couldn't reach a quorum. So we're trying to address that, make sure we don't run into that problem, and encourage encourage the deans and other supervisors to encourage their faculty and staff to go. We may have to revisit it because we have groups like admissions who during the fall are out on the road when they can't be there. And if there's groups like that, we may have to think about, okay, what do we do about that? How do we handle this? But this is our first step. So hopefully we've solved it. We'll know in fall. And that's it.
Any questions for Karen? Next up is our faculty senate update from Karen.
Okay, and I appreciate Karen was the one who attended and she's given me her notes, so I'll be reading from those. So Senate met in Brockport and there were four resolutions that were passed. Resolution to revisit amendments to Article 7 of the policies of the Board of Trustees. Resolution for a public statement on ethical principles. Resolution of the inclusion of clinical faculty for the Chancellor's Awards for Service and the Chancellor's Award for Scholarship and Creative Activities, and resolution on the inclusion of non-tenure-track faculty for the Chancellor's Award in teaching. Presentations were given by Chancellor Zimfer and Provost Cartwright. Chancellor Zimfer expressed disappointment in the latest budget for SUNY. She expressed plans to continue to advocate for more financial support for SUNY. She stated that several legislatures made it clear that a tuition increase in an election year was not going to happen. The Chancellor was asked to consider guidelines for senior administration searches and evaluations, and she agreed. Provost Cartwright discussed and invited input and ideas for three initiatives to support SUNY Excel goals. The three initiatives are micro-credentialing, Open SUNY 2.0, and predictive analytics and education. Provost Cartwright was asked if the campus could change its metrics and enrollment projections for fall. He said it was reiterative process. The last thing I think I'll present here is the president of the SUNY Student Assembly reported on a Move the Box initiative on the SUNY admissions applications. So apparently 60% of the individuals that start a SUNY application that answer yes to a question regarding conviction of a felony stop at that point. So they basically don't continue on with that application. Since they do not complete that application, SUNY does not know the seriousness of the crime. The proposed solution is to move the question toward the end of the application. The thought is if the application is almost complete, the student would be more likely to submit the application after answering the question, which would open us up to individuals who are not necessarily a danger to campus or anything of that nature. They've gone all the way through it at that point, and then hopefully they will continue.
Questions for Barrett?
Can I ask a quick question, Nate?
Sure.
Barrett, did you say that was the student SUNY Assembly that was bringing that initiative forward regarding the felony on the SUNY app?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. I just want to follow up on that.
60% were answering if they were convicted of a felony?
60% that answered yes did not complete the
application. Oh, it's very different.
But the question is a felony?
Yes. So if there was a person who was answering yes to that, 60% of those individuals stopped their application at that point and did not continue.
So as it stands now, we have no idea the criminal background of the student that we're accepting.
Actually, just to give you perspective on that, Ron and the council, if you're not familiar with our process already, we have an admissions review board that I actually chair, and anybody who checks, any applicant who checks that they have had a prior felony conviction on either the SUNY app or a SUNY Canton app goes before the admissions review board, which consists of a few people. There's faculty, there's university police, admissions staff, and we actually meet with those students and get a little bit more information. They have to do a Department of Criminal Justice background check that they provide us that we review as well. So they do actually go through a process.
Do we have the legal right to do that?
Yes, actually, that's a SUNY policy. The policy that we use was actually drafted by SUNY Legal for us, and we review that with them regularly. We actually get pretty frequent guidance on that particular policy because it's just one that always keeps popping back up in the cycle.
Right. Do we, university police, they can bring up a criminal record?
No, actually, university police, we at the college can't do the criminal background check. The student has to do it. They request it through the Department of Criminal Justice, and they have to provide it to us. So we can't actually do it. They have to provide it to us.
That's not public record?
Some of it is public record, but SUNY has instructed us basically to go through this process where the student is required to provide it to us. It's a little different, actually. When I started on the board probably, 10, 12 years ago, we actually did do the background checks back then, and SUNY changed the policy and said, no, that's a little messy. We're going to go forward with requiring the student to provide that to us.
It seems kind of muddy to me. I mean, if I get stopped for speeding, I think a New York State trooper knows immediately my criminal background.
Sure. Without question. The good thing about the Department of Criminal Justice record is that it's comprehensive, and it includes all the information about the felony, the charge, what they were initially charged with, what it was pled down to, and information about that. So it's actually, oftentimes, it's more than what we would have been able to pull to begin with.
So have we had many instances of students that have gotten themselves in trouble on campus that we might have known before then that that was a possibility? I don't know if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Are you asking if we found out when a student got in trouble that they had a prior felony
right.
that we didn't know before?
Right.
It's happened. It happens pretty infrequently. We actually, that admissions review board probably meets with, I'm going to say, maybe four or five students over the summer that have prior felony records. It's pretty consistent, and students are usually honest. Of course, there are students who don't tell us, and occasionally we catch them. It doesn't happen as often as you'd think.
Okay, just questions I had, that was all.
Sure.
Thank you.
Any questions for Barrett? And, with regard to the legal issue, of course, you've heard in the news that the President of the United States is moving to have some restrictions on whether you can even ask these kinds of questions. The idea being that once somebody has served their sentence and so forth, right, that having a prior conviction shouldn't be anything to be held against them. Not everybody agrees with that. Public relations, Travis.
Okay, I'm going to start up today by PR team. So I just recently learned that we won a SUNY Quad Award for our e-publication for our annual report, 2014-15. I think you've seen this before. This is the President's report and the report that you accept as your own. So I guess everyone's a winner here for e-publication. I'm pretty proud of that one out of any of the awards we could have won because of our fantastic PR team. And this is a culmination of all their skill sets all into one piece. This is the first time we've done this. So. Hopefully we can get better and better as we go on. But special thanks to Greg Kai, our photographer, Florent Murray, who wrote a lot of the content, Matt Volkin, who designed the original print publication that we moved into this electronic version, and then Morgan Elliott, who did all the fantastic videos throughout the year. So
Travis, who added all of the interactive content. I'll
take some credit, I guess. For those of you who don't know, SUNY Quad is the SUNY Council for University Advancement Professionals. So there's an annual conference this year. It's in Cooperstown. So we can go pick up that award on June 8th this summer. So, a few rankings that I'd like to make you aware of. Colleges Value Online announced that our legal studies was the number 5 program on their online paralegal programs. And they also had a finance bachelor's program, and we have our finance degree as number 10 there. So I feel like I keep mentioning legal studies and finance every time I come here, but they keep doing a fantastic job and making all these online rankings, so that's great for those.
And Travis, this aren't in New York, this is national.
This is national, yes.
How big a pool are we? We're number 10 out of
200
or
how many
10 out of 11?
I mean, it is a national pool, and because we have online programs, these online programs continually get the recognition where some of our face-to-face may not. The trend now is that online programs or cost-effective programs or what a lot of these bloggers are trying to come up with to provide for rankings. But still in pretty good company. Legal Studies was ranked 3 on another poll a few months ago, and they continually are on the top of the rankings. Maybe because it's one of the few legal studies programs in the country. But either way, we'll take it. Our summer session is nearing record enrollment again for a third consecutive year. We've been doing some targeted marketing on Facebook, Twitter, Pandora. We know certain colleges send a lot of their students, like Binghamton, SUNY Albany, College of Maryland, University of Maryland sends a lot of their students. So we target those newspapers strategically to make sure their students are aware that we have all the programs they need, all the courses they need. So, and that just gives us a little more flexibility with the funds we make off those courses that Doug can use from a classroom technology and across campus.
We use a portion of the funds for discretionary spending, but we save at least usually more than half of it for the whole campus reserves, and that's why, besides not spending it, why the campus has the reserves that put it number one or two in the system. It's really off of our off-term, summer and winter-term revenue that contributes to the reserves. So it's good marketing and then good fiscal management. But it does also, the portion of it that we do use, we're able to use for enhancing things that departments need for their students. You know, that gizmo that we'll bring to the classroom or the lab, that level of experience that otherwise they wouldn't have.
It also gives you faculty development. Mm-hmm. Faculty development. So going to conferences, presenting papers, things like that, that also
raises the profile. Yeah, what I like about the way things are managed fiscally, being still new for another, I'm not allowed to say new for another, what, month and a half, is that these things that may go up very, they don't, but luckily they've been going up steadily, but if they were to go up and down from year to year, that is budgeted as the discretionary spending. So if we had less income in a particular summer or winter term, we could say, ooh, we're a little tight this year for this thing that's extra, as opposed to relying on it for operational things. So luckily it's been going up, and so for those extras or for our savings account, it's good, but if it were to constrict, it's not going to affect our operating budget. It's discretionary.
I'll just give you another example of something that we're going to be doing over the next year. We do have limited funds in our PR budget, but something that kind of caught my eye this past year was an initiative down in New York City, Long Island, to advertise at some of their hospitals. So we did some analysis, figured out how much was going to cost, how many students we needed to get, and factored in. It's really expensive. It was about $15,000 for the year, but it's a large chunk of money for us. But when you compare it to how much it costs to advertise anything in New York City, and when we could target to a couple of specific programs, like our four-year nursing, which is online, and our four-year healthcare management program, it seemed like a no-brainer. And if we were to get three students out of it, hopefully we get hundreds of students out of it, but if we get three students, we break even, makes some sense. And these are folks that are professionals that probably want to move up the ranks. So they want a bachelor's degree, they maybe have a two-year nursing degree, they want to get a four-year bachelor's degree. They can do it online from the comfort of their home, and it only helps us boost our numbers in programs that we need additional seats to fill. That was the other part of the analysis. You know, we have a lot of seats in our online healthcare management program. If we could easily fill those seats, it seems to make sense. So we're going to keep looking at these opportunities and see if there's unique ways where we can advertise in a relatively cost-effective manner. One other thing I wanted to make you aware of, 7 News is doing a special report about financial aid and student debt. Mayor Roberts is the young reporter who came to campus. She interviewed Carrie Cooper, our financial aid director, who is the president of SUNY FAP. So she's one of the most knowledgeable people in the state about financial aid. And they also interviewed 3 of our students, one of whom is Nikki Seitzman, our new SGA representative on the council. And we couldn't have asked for 3 better students with different experiences, different backgrounds to be interviewed. And then Louise Stefanik is also featured in this 2-part. I think it's going to air this week. I saw a commercial over the weekend. I missed it, so I wasn't sure exactly when it's going to air, but I'm pretty sure it's going to air. So keep an eye on that. May got here thinking she was going to go to Potsdam later that day or the next day to get some more interviews, and she got all she needed here, and so we'll be the only ones represented as spring. So very pleased about that. That's all I had for today. Any questions?
Do you want to say a word about Voices Over America?
Oh, yes, okay. Voices Over America is a production that we are working on with PBS, Public Broadcasting. They came in April 6th to interview Zvi faculty members and a few students. This will air at the, you know how PBS programs air, and then they've got that 5 to 10 minute break between the 50 and the top of the hour. So this would air there. It would feature James Earl Jones as the introduction, and then he would kind of conclude it at the end. We get a 6 minute piece for our website. We also get a 3 to 4 minute piece that will air on PBS. And then we also get some commercial time, CNN prime time in the New York City area. So we get, I think, 50 spots there as well. So they're in the editing phase right now. They sent a crew up from New York City. And the day before, they were working on a KFC commercial. These folks have been producers on, like, the Martha Stewart Show, Kelly and Michael. I guess they're still Kelly and Michael for another week or so, right?
Yeah.
And they spent, you know, our talent on camera. They were fantastic. They dealt with a number of, you know, CEOs and different personalities. And they, you know, sitting there all day with the takes, where our people came in and just knocked it out of the park. So it's nice to hear that. And hopefully the end result is a fantastic video piece that we can showcase for a couple of years.
And so James Earl Jones is going to be saying, "Trust your father."
Right.
Hold
his right.
His voice
actually speaks for the next group.
Travis, I mentioned to you before, but anyone else saw the series on the luxury science program here, Channel 7 did. It was actually, it was like 3 nights, maybe in a row. That was one of the best shows.
Their young reporters are fantastic right now. They've been rolling with them for a little while.
Yeah, they also got a big article in BuzzFeed last year. So the program has, I think, doubled in size in the past 2 years, so people are dying to get
it. Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
I liked your remark at graduation about how we get him at the we can take care of him at the beginning and at the end. I thought that was the best line.
You guys are covered in
coming and going.
So, like socialism, right? Travis, just a question. What's the most effective avenue for advertising, you think?
Is it most effective? Trouble is now, everyone is everywhere. Nobody's in one spot like they used to be. Before, you could just throw a TV ad on local television and an ad in the newspaper, and you hit pretty much everybody. But now, we have to be a little more strategic. We have to find the students on Twitter and Facebook.
Social media.
You know, we have to do some mobile advertising, still try to do some commercials. Most of the stuff we're doing now is more digital. We don't do as much traditional newspaper advertising. Unfortunately, the newspapers are just, you know, dying, and I don't know how many kids actually even pick up a newspaper. You could pull this room, how many people actually pick up a newspaper in this room, you know? So it's, I mean, it's a struggle to try to figure out where the students are and, you know, how we best reach them. And we're trying to do our best there. And, a lot of it is outreach by our awesome admissions department, because they're, you know, on the ground meeting with all of our students and, you know, trying to get into the classrooms when they can to demo some of our programs. And, you know, that's usually the best way. But, you know, we try to use Twitter, Facebook, Pandora, digital radio. But we try to, you know, hit a lot of different spots. So, you know, you may not hear us in one spot, but you might hear us somewhere else. We try to pin down by demographic as well.
Okay, next up, Student Affairs, Courtney.
Thanks, everyone. And I'm sorry I'm joining you by phone. Unfortunately, I'm on doctor-ordered bed rest for some pregnancy complications, so this is the longest I've ever been away from campus. And I miss seeing all of your faces, and because I don't have you as cues to tell me when I'm going on too long, somebody can just cough really loud and tell me it's time for me to stop giving a report.
I'm sitting next to the chloroquine.
What's that?
I'm sitting right next to the chloroquine. Just pull it.
Oh, perfect. You know what? That'd be great. So whatever works for the council is fine. And if you need anything additional from me after my report, just let me know. I'm glad to email things to the council or answer questions via phone. So I am working from home. Just a few updates this morning. I know Nikki Zeitzman wasn't able to join us today. She's our new student government president. I know most of you have met her before. She's come to some college council events. She's fantastic, and we're really, really excited to have her. So hopefully you'll get to meet her in the fall. I figured you would all want to know about some of our judicial cases that we've had recently that have made the news, and I thought I'd give you a couple updates on those. First and foremost, I want to thank Travis and the PR staff.
they don't get enough credit for everything that they do. Travis and Greg Kai and Lorette and Matt have all been really, really phenomenal. You all know it was a busy end of the semester, so with the last three and a half, four weeks, we had three pretty big incidents happen kind of right after one another, and I really appreciate everything that Travis and PR did to help us through that. So that was first and foremost. The Alpha Theta Gamma house incident, that one made the news. I'm sure most of you saw that. We had an alleged sexual assault that happened there involving potentially four students. At this point, we are moving forward with charging two of the four students. They'll go before judicial hearing boards. After conducting about 35 student interviews, we determined that the other two students who were allegedly involved really didn't have a significant role or didn't have a role at all. And so at this point, those two students are not going through the judicial process. The fraternity itself is still being investigated, and we'll determine the outcome after we get through finishing up with all the students involved. So those hearings will be coming up in the next 2 to 3 weeks at this point. We're actually, my student conduct staff is working on that as we speak. I just got word, literally as I was sitting here, that the judicial hearing board met with the students over the stabbing incident that happened the last week of classes, and they have just suspended that student for 2 years. So that happened about 5 minutes ago, so that's news to everybody around the table at this point. So both of those cases wrapped up pretty quickly, and we had another sexual assault that did not make the media, but that was a individual student in a residence hall room, and the student was found responsible and was actually expelled. So those three cases have all either been wrapped up or will be wrapped up in the coming days. I don't know, before I move on, if anyone had questions on those. I know those are all big things. Okay. In athletics, we had some pretty big staffing changes that have happened. In a matter of 3.5-4 weeks, we lost our men's basketball coach, our women's basketball coach, our men's hockey coach, and our volleyball coach. That sounds like a lot. They all left for completely different reasons. Our men's basketball coach was offered a phenomenal offer from SUNY Potsdam, and he has recently left us, and we are in the process of searching. He'll be a hard person to replace, but unfortunately that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. Our women's basketball coach retired. We were happy for Bruce Talon that he was able to take that opportunity, and we just hired Jade Perry as our new women's basketball coach, and she'll start with us in the next couple of weeks. Men's hockey coach got an offer from a private school in Saranac Lake, and we have promoted our assistant coach to the men's hockey coaching position. He's coached with us for about a year, and we've been really impressed with what we've seen from him. And lastly, our women's volleyball coach accepted a position at Clemson, and we promoted the assistant coach in that position as well. She's been with us simply 2 years, and she was just promoted to the head volleyball coach. So a lot of staffing changes, but really great people, both that left and that are still here with us. So we're really excited to see what they can bring to the table for next year. Spring Olympics. This is our fourth year hosting the regional Spring Olympics, and it was a huge, or excuse me, the Special Olympics, and it was a huge success. We had 175 Special Olympians and about 175 students and staff who volunteered to help, so it was a really, really fantastic day. If you get bored, there are lots of photos on the athletics webpage and on the social media websites for athletics that you can check out. It was just a really, really fantastic day. And athletics is actually continuing to make efforts to join a conference. They've been working really closely with Dr. Spran and have had some promising phone calls over the past couple of weeks. I don't know if he wants to expand on that at all, but we're really trying to get ourselves in a conference. It's been a frustrating couple of years, but I think we have some real serious contenders at this point. And then last but not least for me, our housing numbers are also looking really great for fall. We are up about 5% overall. And new students were up 15%, which is almost 50 students. And returning students are flat at this point. So Housing numbers are looking good, which is always fantastic. Kennedy Hall is filled, and we're looking forward to another fantastic year.
Thank you, Courtney. And just to expand on a couple of things that you said, with regard to a conference, we're working with our colleagues at the other SUNY Colleges of Technology, and are looking at forming our own conference either as part of SUNY or separately, and we've gotten a surprising amount of support, actually, in doing this from some places we thought it might be a harder climb. And so, not over till it's over, but things are looking healthy there. And if you're concerned about the number of coaches that are leaving, I'd point out that this is actually a mark of our success, okay? Because when our teams are successful, places that are larger and have more money than us say, hey, we need to grab their coach, and that's exactly what's happened. And so, you know, when you look at the teams that I mentioned, right, our women's volleyball, our men's basketball, our women's hockey teams all made it to their national playoffs. Okay, so it's not surprising that, you know, two out of those three coaches got snagged, and our men's hockey players did well as well. Lacrosse had the most winning season it's ever had, right, so that's great. And, of course, we took the national number one in cross country. And so, you know, it's been a great year for us in terms of athletics, but there's a price to be paid for being so successful. And so, you know, that's just kind of the nature of the kind of college we are, right? We build them, and then other people recruit them, right, because they're so good. And so that's what's happening there. Any other questions for Courtney? All right, and then to almost wrap it up, Lenora Van Der Zee and University of Relations.
So, as Dr. Sinclair mentioned, we're heading to Albany this afternoon to discuss with some of our local legislators the issues with the SUNY budget. We're hoping that there are potentially some fixes that can occur that will at least give us a little band-aid to put on what is a rather deep fiscal wound by the budget. We were fairly disappointed with that. We did lots of visits during the budget season and believed that we made clear to our legislators, part of you, look, we understand you don't want to raise tuition. We're right there with you. That's fine. But if you don't raise tuition, here's how it'll work. We'll be set back hundreds of thousands of dollars at the beginning of every academic year. So the state needs to do its part if you don't want to come down the backs of students. And unfortunately, we're still going to be sending that message and hopefully working with creative solutions to that problem. We did also go to SUNY Day DC, Dr. Sinclair and I did, and I think we had a very successful time there with our legislators. There were various talks from people that know about the federal budget and things like that, but I think more importantly, we had a face-to-face with Senator Schumer. I'm calling it our walk and talk. Are you guys familiar with the West Wing television show? Cool. The walk and talk that they always have? We had a walk and talk with Senator Schumer. And he was very supportive of our programs. But I think more importantly than that, while we were waiting for him to get done with his various meetings, we spent about 45 minutes with his assistant, which is always a very good thing. That's where the work actually gets done. So I think we were really pleased with those conversations. We found Congressman Stefanik to be also very, very supportive, particularly of our business accelerator initiative. She's really excited about that and looking forward to helping in any way she can. She's also been very supportive of financial aid programs that would really benefit our students, including the year-round Pell program. So we feel like when we've spoken to her about various educational issues, she's really listened and she's taken action at the federal level. So we're very thankful to her for that. We just learned that there's legislation to allow 6 to 7 SUNY institutions that are on either international or state borders to pilot a program whereby they would be able to offer nearby students across the border in-state tuition. We've answered the call as to whether we would be interested in that with a resounding yes, absolutely, please sign us up. So we'll see what happens with that. We're going to be working closely with the SUNY officials to try to get that passed as well. As I can see in the budget, the only SUNY institution that received an additional $500,000 allocation in our operation
was just talking about just yesterday, up in Messina, there was a meeting with Senator Gillibrand's staff and various agencies, federal agencies, and some state agencies that provide funding for the North Country. And in talking with these individuals, there are a number of opportunities for us that we will be pursuing. And so it's going to be a busy year in terms of grant writing and so forth. There are opportunities and we will be pursuing. Any questions for the moment? All right, then let me close it off by mentioning one last thing. Diversity is something that's very important on this campus. And we've done a number of things this year to try to make our campus a more welcoming place, starting off at the very beginning of the year with having all students getting a wristband saying everyone is welcome here. Okay, and that's, kind of what we try to live up to. And so we've had a nice range of activities. We have applied for funding from SUNY and gotten it for a Native American initiative on our campus. We've applied to SUNY for support in terms of broadening our range of programs that we'll offer in the diversity area. I haven't heard back yet on that, but hopefully that's coming. We just put in, I believe, a $50,000 proposal to upgrade a facility right down the hall, actually, and make it into a diversity center. Right, as well as to upgrade our cyber cafe in the library into a more welcoming place for commuter students, and also as a small venue for diversity programming. And I'm pleased to tell you that we will be opening our diversity center this fall. So this campus will have a diversity center. And in staffing it, SUNY has got an initiative that said every campus has to have a chief diversity officer. We decided to do it a little bit differently. We got SUNY's approval. And so since the attributes that they wanted were, at least as far as I could tell, impossible for any one person to actually fulfill, we decided to go with two co-chief diversity officers, one from the academic side and one from the student life side. And the academic side, I guess you'll be the first to hear, we've offered and he's accepted, is Bill Jones, right, who is, of course, been very active in working with Native American students and quite a number of other diversity efforts. And on the student life side will be Lashwanda Ingram. And they're going to meet directly with the top folks at the college, as, SUNY has wanted it set up. So we're going to have a little committee consisting of me, the provost, Courtney, and our two co-CDOs, and they'll also serve on our executive council. And so, because we take this extremely seriously. And so, any questions about that? And that, Mr. Chair, concludes my report.
Any questions, concerns? Jokes. okay.
What was it that you said at graduation about our steel bridge team?
I don't want to be glib. I said I'm glad to be involved in this institution that had a bridge building team and not a wall building team.
Never well received.
Okay, Chair will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Moved by John, second by Joe. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much for coming. Chair, our county residents, we have school board elections.
That's accomplished.
God, I wish I could say it was a presidential election.